This is Dave Lewis. I once ordered a book which claimed to be an encyclopedia of record producers for mere pennies from an online bookseller. Once I got it, I understood why it was so cheap. It didn't contain any information, not even mention, of the early legends of the record production game. Fellows like Will Geisberg, Tommy Rockwell, Eli Oberstein, Jack Kapp, and perhaps most painfully, Ralph Peer. Everyone included in the book were from the 1950s or later. Tom Dowd, the Ortegans, Phil Ramone, and what have you. While that did not prevent this so-called encyclopedia from meeting its fate in the circular file, it did occur to me that one reason that it is hard to relate early record producers to their post-World War II counterparts is that the job description is so different from what it would become. Modern record producers work as liaisons between talent and recording engineers in order to craft a specific sound profile for an artist and do simple things like make sure the talent doesn't get too chemically altered to function in the course of a session. The old-time record producers had a far more expanded role. They scouted and auditioned talent, booked sessions, engaged arrangers and session men, secured copywriting and publishing for songs, and, in some cases, were themselves record company executives, not just employees. Producer and publisher Ralph Peer was just such a figure, and Barry Mazur's new book, Ralph Peer and the Making of Popular Roots Music, sets its target on elucidating the story of a rare figure in the music business, someone not very knowledgeable in the nuts and bolts aspect of music making, who nonetheless made a fortune exploring uncharted waters in American music and translating such interests into a mass market phenomenon, the effects of which are still felt today. The son of a retailer, Ralph Peer started out as a Columbia Records employee in the then far-flung Kansas City in the days when the New York songwriting machine had an uncontested grip on the popular landscape. Peer's vision was different. He took a strong interest in local, vernacular music, yet understood that a direct representation of such regional songs would not likely take the public's fancy so much as a cleaned-up version of it, made friendly to a wide range of potential listeners. And as radio, and later talking pictures, entered mass communications, Peer's thinking would prove correct. While Tin Pan Alley songsters remained very much in the forefront of the popular music industry, folk songs began to increase their share of the market, particularly when charismatic performers such as the ones Peer began to cultivate, like Jimmy Rogers and the Carter Family, began to appear on records. Several of the standard genres in which Ralph Peer worked did not yet have names when he began, but as country music, gospel music, Latin music, and blues, they would all develop into separate industries with their own representative identities and sales charts. That was all fine and good with record companies like RCA Victor, with whom Ralph Peer worked most famously, but it was through music publishing and not through making records that Peer built his fortune and made his name as the founder and head of Peer Southern, now known as Peer Music. And so sometimes it is easy to forget how important Ralph Peer was to the record industry. Barry Mazur, in his book, sets the record straight and sorts out all of the various strands of Peer's multifaceted business interests. It is a richly detailed book, ripe with good research, sensible commentary, and fruitful references to figures both great and obscure, ranging from Mamie Smith, to Buddy Holly. The only thing with which I have any comment other than to highly recommend this book is that sometimes I do not agree with some of the conclusions drawn, but this is always with a sense of I need to investigate that further to my own satisfaction, rather than one of this guy doesn't have his facts on straight. Mazur is dealing with an important subject that doesn't have a previous book exploring his life. Ralph Peer and the making of popular roots music feels authoritative and true rather than wandering and presumptive, traits one often encounters when new biographical ground is being broken. Chalk it up to Mazur's considerable experience in writing about such topics. He has previously written on Jimmy Rogers, for example, and his access to the Peer Southern files and to familial correspondence and the wealth of researchers he has sought out on Ralph Peer's behalf. This book should interest anyone who is really interested in how folk music got to be pop music and how the modest strains of ordinary people rose to become million-selling hits known to everyone with access to a phonograph or radio. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Dave Lewis.